Welcome to No Longer Hopeless. I'm your host, Lane Mercer, co-founder of L&L Ministries. This podcast is a place where you can come to get encouragement and hope restored. We showcase that there's always hope to be found for the right here and right now in the Lord. Let's get started, shall we? Hey, hope you're doing okay. Hope you're doing all right. Thanks so much for tuning in to No Longer Hopeless Podcast. If you're not doing all right, I'm glad you're here. You come to the right place to get hope because everyone deserves the chance to be no longer hopeless. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming along this ride. Hey, I wanted to share with you, we're reviewing off and on a series that we've been going through, and this is book three in the series. I want to talk to you about that today. The series is called God's Generals. This one is called, the subtitle, The Revivalist. The author is Roberts Liardin. I'm going to tell you a little bit about his bio. Let me just read this straight from the book here. Roberts Liardin's career in ministry began in his teens with speaking engagements and the publication of his first book, I Saw Heaven. Liardin has now sold more than 6 million books worldwide in over 50 languages and is internationally renowned. Liardin's God's General series has established him as a leading Protestant church historian. Liardin is the founder of the Embassy Christian Center in Orange County, California, which is a base for worldwide humanitarian work that includes assistance to the poor, needy in Southern California and throughout the world. He also built one of the largest Christian churches and Bible colleges in Orange County. Anyway, I want to get right into it because it's a little bit for a section I want to share with you in this one. This is a fun one of the series. I got to say, this is definitely ranking in the top for me, this third book. And I like the whole series, actually. I encourage you to get it. But this one I like particularly because of the subtitle, The Revivalist. That's what I really feel for me is that I'm a revivalist. I'm one that wants to go into the churches to wake up the church, help them no longer be dormant, but wake up and run to God and not away from God. And so I want to read the summary of this, and you should recognize some of the names that he actually talks about in here. If not, all the more reason I encourage you to get this book. I'll leave a link in the description for you to find it. It's good to know the history of Christianity, and it's been very well documented through the series. If you do know these names, I would encourage you still get the book, God's Generals, the whole series actually, but God's Generals, The Revivalist, because I bet you're gonna find some information either you've forgotten, did not know. You're also gonna be able to see some rare photos of these generals. So let me read the description, the summary of the God's Generals, The Revivalist to you. Here we go. In this third volume of God's Generals, Roberts Liardin follows the lives and faith journeys of some of the most powerful preachers ever to ignite the fires of revival. Liardin goes beyond history, drawing crucial life applications and inspiration from the lives of these mighty warriors so that you can learn how to be led by the Spirit of God, fulfill God's call on your life, and experience the joy of winning souls. Learn from the faith journeys and lives of these great revivalists. John and Charles Wesley, the brothers who founded Methodism and brought the message of free grace to the masses in England and abroad. George Whitefield, whose dramatic flair and passionate preaching didn't need modern conveniences like microphones or sound systems to reach crowds more than 60,000 people. Jonathan Edwards, a Puritan whose preaching blended compassion for people's souls and condemnation of sinful habits to achieve a balance of effective spiritual conversion. Francis Asbury, the tireless itinerant preacher who took the gospel to the extreme frontiers of the American colonies. Peter Cartwright, a no-nonsense preacher whose firmness and fist brought people to faith. Charles Finney, the skeptical lawyer turned evangelist whose ministry was marked by deep prayer and divine healing. Dwight L. Moody, the friend of the fatherless who fed and clothed Chicago's orphans, planted Sunday schools throughout the city, and saved more than 1 million souls. William and Catherine Booth, who gave food to the hungry, fought to free those trapped in sex trafficking, and founded the Salvation Army, now the largest charitable organization in the world. And Billy Graham, counselor and confidant of 11 United States presidents who preached God's unconditional love and saving grace to millions. Let these revivalists inspire your life and revitalize your ministry. It's a great book, powerful book. I'm going to read a small section to you just as an example, just to give you an idea of one of the listed there. This is actually, I went back and forth because I could easily pick any of these in this book because I enjoy this so much. But I finally landed on that. I want to share this one scene with you. I think it's an incredible, powerful moment. But this one is called, let me get to the title of it is Peter Cartwright, the pistol-toting evangelist. Evangelist. His motto is love everybody and fear no man. So I want to read this one little section to you. It's found on page 267 and 268 and 69, and just get you a quick glimpse. And so I'm going to read to you. This will be the author, and then he actually takes part of Peter Cartwright's journal. So here we go. At this time, the circuit riders in the West were lucky to make $40 a year. Lodging was often hard to come by. Their circuits could stretch as far as 500 miles. And being away from friends and family most of the time must have been difficult. Temptations threatened to derail even the most devoted of ministers, and many succumbed to these temptations. Peter himself experienced at least one such temptation when the sins of his youth called on him with great force and emotion. Read what he wrote and observe how he prevailed in his journal. Saturday night came on and found me in a strange region of the country. And in the hills, knobs, and spurs of the Cumberland Mountains, I greatly desired to stop on the approaching Sabbath and spend it with the Christian people. But I was now in a region of the country where there was no gospel minister for many miles around, and whereas I learned, many of the scattered population had never heard a gospel sermon in all their lives, and where the inhabitants knew no Sabbath, but they only knew to hunt, to visit, drink, and dance. Thus lonesome and pensive, late in the evening, I hailed at a tolerably decent house, and the landlord kept entertainment. I rode up and asked for quarters. The gentleman said I could stay, but he was afraid I would not enjoy myself very much as a traveler, inasmuch as they had a party meeting there tonight, and they may even have a little dance. I inquired how far it would be to a decent house of entertainment on the road. He said another 7 miles. I told him if he would treat me civilly and feed my horse well, by his leave I would stay. He assured me I should be treated civilly. I dismounted and went in. The people collected, a large company. I saw there was not much drinking going on yet. I quietly took my seat in one corner of the house, and the dance commenced. I sat quietly musing, a total stranger, and greatly desired to preach to these people. Finally, I concluded to spend the next day, the Sabbath, there, and asked the privilege to preach to them. I had hardly settled to this point in my mind when a beautiful red-headed young lady walked very gracefully up to me, dropped a handsome curtsy, and pleasantly, with a winning smile, invited me out to take a dance with her. I can hardly describe my thoughts or feelings on the occasion. However, in a moment, I resolved on a desperate experiment. I rose as gracefully as I could. I will not say with some emotion, but with many emotions. The young lady moved to my right side. I grasped her right hand with my right hand, and she leaned her left arm on mine. In this position, we walked on the floor. The whole company seemed pleased at this act of politeness in the young lady shown to a stranger. The colored man, who was the fiddler, began to put the fiddle in his best order. I then spoke to the fiddler to hold a moment and added that for several years I had not undertaken any matter of importance without first asking the blessing of God upon it. And I desire now to ask the blessing of God upon this beautiful young lady and the whole company that had shown at such an act of politeness to a total stranger. Here I grasped the young lady's hand tightly and I said, "Let us kneel down and pray now." And then instantly dropped on my knees and commenced praying with all power of a soul and body that I could command. The young lady tried to get loose from me, but I held her tight. Presently, she fell to her knees. Some of the company kneeled. Some stood. Some fled. Some sat still. Some looked curious. The fiddler ran off to the kitchen saying, "Lord a mercy, what the matter? What is this mean?" While I prayed, some wept, and wept aloud, and some cried for mercy. I rose from my knees and commenced an exhortation, after which I sang a hymn. The young lady who invited me on the floor lay prostrate, crying earnestly for mercy. I exhorted again. I sang and prayed nearly all the night. About 15 of the company professed religion, and our meeting lasted the next day and the next night. And as many more were powerfully converted, I organized a society, took 32 to the church, sent them a preacher. My landlord was appointed leader, which post he held for many years. This was the commencement of a great and glorious revival of religion in that region of the country, and several of the young men converted at this Methodist preacher's dance became useful ministers of Jesus Christ. It then goes back to the author, and he says, it's understandable that Peter would have been an attractive figure as a frontiersman. He was nearly 6 feet tall, stood erect and composed. His thick, curly black hair sat atop a large imposing head and a short, thick neck. His eyes were dark and piercing. He had a Roman nose, and he had constantly wore a mirthful grin. His face was enormously theatrical. Its expression was generally friendly, but could turn stormy and menacing in an instant, a skill he used well in preaching. To these characteristics, he added the air of a man in charge of the situation, a man born to rule. Combining that with his sharp wit and uncanny insightfulness, he was an imposing viral presence wherever he went. And the story goes on, and that's just one small example of just God using someone who said yes to him. What an incredible moment that he took to find a way to glorify God, begin to pray, and revival broke out at the dance. Did you hear that? And then the meeting ended up going for nights. People got converted left and right. Anyway, I enjoy Peter Cartwright quite a bit. I actually enjoy all of this on this list. I encourage you. Hey, if you have found this story to be helpful and hopeful to you, share it. I encourage you to get the book, God's Generals, The Revivalist by Robert Sliarden. And I'll put a link in the description below. If you found this podcast to be any kind of encouragement to you, I encourage you to share it, get the word out, tell others about it, like, share, subscribe. Thank you so much for tuning in, and let's see what happens next week. That wraps up this episode of No Longer Hopeless. If you found this to be an encouragement to you, then please subscribe so not to miss out when another goes out. If you can think of anyone who might benefit from this podcast, then I ask that you please share it. We would love to hear from you. Connect with us on Facebook by searching for LNL Ministries, or you can email us at nolongerhopelesspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And remember, as long as you have breath within you, then you can still have the chance to be no longer hopeless.